started, we had a committee that took a tour today, and we were trying to wait for some of those folks to come, but out of respect for your time, I think we'll just get started. We don't have a quorum yet, but Mr. Gillespie has been gracious enough to come and give us a little presentation on the population changes and shifts in the state of Minnesota. But before we do that, I was hoping that Representative Jean Poppe will move the minutes for today. And
I absolutely will, Representative Anderson.
Okay, good. Any questions or additions? Or if not, we will vote to approve the minutes. We can't yet because we don't have quorum. So with that, all those in favor of the minutes as approved on January 18, 2011, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Those amendments passed and will be put into the record. And with that, Mr. Gillespie, if you could please first state your name and where you come from, and we'll get on with the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Tom Gillespie. I'm the Minnesota State Demographer in the Minnesota State Department of Administration. I just wanted to give a brief presentation on some of the population changes that we have seen over the last decade.
Mr. Gillespie, if I could pause you for one moment. We do have a quorum right now, so we're officially in order. If you could proceed from there, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The population changes in the state over the last decade, as reflected in our population estimates that we make on an annual basis, and estimates that we've also made of legislative and congressional districts. We still haven't heard exactly when we're going to receive the census data, but it should be sometime within the next 2 to 4 weeks, and so we are anxiously awaiting final word on when exactly we will receive that.
And Mr. Gillespie, if I could, you know, I understand that we typically get further up on the agenda for the Census Bureau because we have statutory requirements. Do you know what was the thought process behind the Census Bureau in putting us in the order that they have us in now? Or,
Madam Chair, some of the states have statutory requirements that require that they have a redistricting plan completed before the end of their legislative session in 2011, which would mean that they have 2 or 3 months to do this, and they will be the ones that receive the data first, and so the Census Bureau has a priority listing. I don't know exactly where we fit on that because they don't release that priority listing, but the priority listing is based on their understanding of the critical timing aspects of the need for the data. We've normally been in the first half or so of the states historically. We do have actually a month less now than we did 10 years ago, as we know. So we're anxiously awaiting. I know, as you are.
Yes.
Based upon the 2010 population count and the 2010 census, the average state house seat has increased by 2,869 people from where it was in 2000. The average Senate district has increased by 5,738 people, and the average U.S. congressional district has increased by 48,056 people over the past decade.
Mr. Gillespie, can you just, for the sake of the members, go review the numbers of what they were for the 2000 to the 2009 decade, and for both the House, the Senate, and the U.S. House district, so members know where we're going
Madam
from?
Madam Chair, I'm afraid I didn't write that. I have it on a spreadsheet back at the office, and I didn't write those numbers down.
Okay.
But if I can send those numbers on to Mr. Freeman, and if you could distribute that, that would be fine.
Thank you. And perhaps Mr. Gehring has that data. Nope. We're striking out today. Uh-oh. All right, Mr. Gillespie.
most of the population change that we have seen in the last decade is in the donut ring around the Twin Cities, particularly in the counties of Wright and Sherburne and Isanti and Chisago and Scott and Carver counties, where the where the greatest population increase occurred. There was also a strong increase in the St. Cloud area and in the Rochester area, as well as generally in the Brainerd, Detroit Lakes, Alexandria area, and in the Moorhead area of the state. The southwest and western portions of the state, many of the counties lost population over the last decade, and that is a trend that has been continuing over a very long period of time. The population growth by economic development region, the western regions of the state are regions 1, 4, 6W and 8, and regions 1 and 6W and 8 all lost population during the last decade, as they did during the 90s. However, the decline was sharper this last decade than it was during the 90s. The increase in region 7W, which is in the St. Cloud area, which includes Wright and Sherburne counties, was a bit stronger than it was during the 90s. So as a result, growth was a bit more concentrated in those rapid growth areas of the state during the past decade than it was in the previous decade. Overall in the state, looking at congressional districts, the 6th congressional district.
Mr. Glaspie, before you go on, is it possible for you to provide us with a map that has these little regions divided out at some point, so members have an idea what the 1 through 11, where those are located within the state?
Madam Chair, yes, I certainly can.
Great, thank you.
The congressional districts in the North Suburban area, congressional district 6, and in the Southern Suburban area, congressional district 2, are the largest districts, and those are areas that corresponded to that very rapid growth population area. At the same time, the smallest district is District 7 on the western edge of the state. As I indicated, particularly the northern portion of that district and the southern portion of that district generally has lost population over the past decade, and the differences in population have been quite substantial. This graph also indicates the magnitude of the differences, with District 6 being the largest district and District 2 following. These are deviations from the equal population size and will represent the degree to which congressional districts, if the same configuration is maintained, the degree to which those districts would need to be adjusted. Looking at state house districts gives a more detailed feeling of the kinds of population changes, and as we can see, the areas in the northwest and the southwest and the northeast portions of the state have grown the least over the past decade, with some districts likely having lost population over the last decade. And again, the greatest growth, the largest growth, was in the suburban area, suburban districts, particularly on the western suburban side of the Twin Cities, with that area around Wright and Sherburne County, and again in Scott and Carver County, experiencing the most rapid growth in the state, as indicated by the dark green portions of this map. Focusing more in on the Twin City area, because there's so many districts in the Twin City area packed in, it's a little bit easier to see with this more detailed examination. You can see the large dark green areas in the suburban and exurban districts have grown substantially, while many of the central city districts have experienced modest gain or actual population loss, and so that the difference is quite substantial now in population.
Mr. Glaspie, is that an ongoing trend of the different areas of growth and decline? Is this, you know, what we saw 10 years ago as well?
Madam Chair, that is very consistent with the trend that we saw in the 90s and also during the 80s. This is an ongoing trend. The two cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul have tended to stabilize after substantial population loss during the 50s and 60s, but they are still not growing to the extent that many of the suburban areas have been experiencing growth.
And Mr. Glaspie, what has been the decline in population in those two areas?
Madam Chair, over the last decade, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I'm trying to remember from graphs that I've looked at the cities recently, but the population change has been slightly downward, but relatively flat by historic experience, whereas some of the suburban counties in the outlying areas such as Wright and Sherburn have been growing at a rate of approximately 4% per year. So that's rather substantial difference between essentially zero and very rapid rate of population growth. Comparing this decade to last decade and the previous decade, it appears at this time that the differences by district are larger than we saw in 2000, but not quite as large as we saw in 1990. The range from the smallest to largest districts now is about 25,000 people. In 2000, it was about 18,000 people, but in 1990, it was about 28,000 people. So this decade, this redistricting would be sort of intermediate between the 1990 and the 2000 redistricting in terms of the magnitude of change that would need to be resolved in the redrawing of the district lines. And with that, Madam Chair, I can stand for any questions.
Members, any questions? Okay. Thank you,
Madam
Mr. Glaspie.
Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I have a whole bunch, but it's probably better that we wait until the numbers come in. But can you give us a little more idea of why we're in the intermediary part right now, or is it that people are living longer, or is it that new people are coming into the state, or more children being born, or what?
Mr. Glaspie.
Representative Murphy, during the 1980s, we had areas that suffered rather substantial negative economic impact, particularly in northeastern Minnesota and in rural Minnesota. And many of those had not fully recovered during the 1980s. With the suburban areas growing rapidly during the 80s, there were very substantial rates of growth difference in population, so that these suburban areas continued to grow even during rather hard economic times. But many of the areas in southwestern and western Minnesota and in northeastern Minnesota declined substantially in population. And then in the 1990s, we saw more of a spreading out of the growth. Some of the areas that had experienced substantial declines were declining less, and in some cases there were even reversals in growth. Some cities and counties that had been declining for several decades began to see some growth, largely due to local manufacturing growth. One example might be in Nobles County in Worthington in southwestern Minnesota, where a concentration of the meatpacking industry created a situation of moving from a large number of small producers, small meat packing plants, to a substantial concentration of activity, and Worthington was one of the areas that benefited in terms of population gain from that concentration of effort, and that showed up during the growth of the 1990s, which was also a very strong growth decade for Minnesota. In that decade, we grew at about the same rate as the national average, which is truly remarkable because no Frost Belt state has done that in the last five decades. That we grew at about the same rate as the nation, and that was largely, it was the suburban growth, exurban growth, that growth in Isanti and Chisago and Wright and Sherburne counties continued on as it had, but we began to see more growth, and it was a wider distribution of the growth. This decade moved back more to the kind of growth pattern that we saw during the 60s and 70s, and during the 1960s and 1970s, where we saw more concentration, certainly, than in the 90s, not quite as extreme as it was in the 80s, but we did see more concentrated growth. That may be now shifting, that there's some indication that growth in some of the most rapidly growing counties has been substantially impacted by the recession and the housing market. But overall, during the decade, which is the number that this committee will be looking at in the final population, those counties still continue to grow strongly, whereas some of the other counties went back to an earlier pattern of growth or non-growth. A pattern that in some ways has been set up for the last century. Many, particularly prairie counties in the United States, rural counties in the United States, have experienced very long-term population losses as many of their young people leave the area to seek opportunities in the big cities, and so large metropolitan areas have benefited, and many of the rural areas have either not grown or have declined in population and have grown very old.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gillespie, the dark green counties, that's the area that you said in the metro area, or that's the area that you said we're growing 4%?
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Glassby. Murphy, that those areas certainly would be growing in that range of magnitude. The dark green counties on this map span from Sherburne and Wright counties down to Scott and Carver counties, and those are counties that for most of the decade, along with Isanti and Chisago counties to the north of the Twin Cities along Interstate 35, that for much of the decade those counties were included among the fastest growing counties of the nation.
And Representative Murphy. Madam Chair, Mr. Gillespie, is that because there was more available land there?
Mr. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, there has long been a desire for the entire post-World War II period, a stated desire for when you survey people to live in a rural area. And apparently they don't mean Kitson County. Substantially rural. I mean, true rural areas. What they appear to mean is on a few acres, far enough away from the congestion, but still close enough to drive to work every day in the cities and enjoy the shopping opportunities and things like that. And these are counties that have met that definition that they're. In the view of the people moving there, they're far enough away from the core cities, but close enough in that they can live a rural type lifestyle while at the same time having close access to shopping and jobs and other large metropolitan area amenities.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Glaspie. I appreciate it.
Sure.
And Mr. Gary? Mr. Gehring is going to go over the redistricting timeline, in particular the impact on local units of government. You'll find a separate sheet in your packet, members. Mr. Gehring, if you could state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, Matt Gehring from the House Research Department. As Chair Anderson just mentioned, my presentation today is going to be kind of focused on the timeline, specifically with an emphasis on effects and sort of requirements of local units of government in the redistricting process. I don't have a whole extensive presentation. I'm sort of going to talk through some of the big questions that local units of government will have to consider as they go through the next 2 years, including whether they have to redistrict at all. If they do, what do their districts have to look like? What happens if they don't redistrict? And when does this all have to be done? So that's kind of my intention. And then at the end, I'll walk through the timeline that should be in your packets. So as you all know, you'll be redistricting congressional and legislative districts over the next year and a half or so. But at the same time, local units of government will also be engaging in the process of redistricting their precinct boundaries and ward boundaries consistent with whatever is decided at the legislative level. Cities and counties and school districts have to wait until the legislative district boundaries are complete. So you all know of the February 21st, 2012 deadline for all of you to complete some congressional boundaries and legislative boundaries. All the local units of government will be waiting for you to complete that process so that they can begin their process. That's required by statute, and part of the reason is that if you think of all the districts and precincts in the state as sort of building blocks within one another, the requirements in law are that precincts can't be split into different districts, into different areas, and so part of the reason that the cities and local units of government wait until you complete the legislative boundaries is because they'll draw their precinct boundaries and they'll have to make sure they nest within the legislative lines that you draw. So it wouldn't make sense to have them sort of simultaneously working on their own plans and then have you come back and split them in half. So basically most municipal redistricting processes will begin after February 21st of 2012, at least the formal process. I mean, they'll begin the process of sort of ramping up and doing the work, but they won't be able to actually draw any boundaries until there are some legislative lines in place.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question about the number of cities with 2011 elections. Do you know what that number would be? Are there any that we're looking at that would need to be doing something this year?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Poppy, I believe St. Paul is going to be have an election this fall. And I think Duluth may also have an election this fall. Those are the two big cities that I'm aware of. There could be some other smaller cities around the state. In the 2000s process, Minneapolis had a 2001 city election, which caused some changes in the law that were just enacted just a couple of years ago, or last year actually, that relate to drawing ward boundaries in those cities.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Madam Chair, could you just then describe again, Mr. Gehring, what exactly happens and how that impacts us? I think Representative Marquardt is also indicating that Moorhead perhaps is one of those cities that has wards and has an earlier deadline. So what will happen as they reconfigure their boundaries, and how does that impact us?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, so in cities of the first class that have ward boundaries in their city, which would be Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, and beginning once the census results are certified, Rochester as well, have to create new ward boundaries this year before their 2011 elections. And so that's a process that's going to take place before the legislative boundaries are drawn. It'll take place this spring, and on the timeline you can see their deadline, I think, is it's May 3rd of this year. So they'll be in the process using some census data to redraw their ward boundaries to comply with statute and constitutional requirements. Once the legislative plan has been enacted next year, then there can be some adjustments made to precinct boundaries and the ward boundaries following the legislative completion of the legislative process, but they will have to draw new boundaries for this fall's elections as well.
And Representative Poppe, I do believe that Representative Kahn is working on a bill for Minneapolis in particular because of this issue to address some of the problems that have come up since last year's bill getting passed. So I'm guessing your communities and Representative Marquardt's area will probably have some ideas for that as well. So any other questions, members, right now?
So,
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gehring, for clarification then, so that the cities that have elections this year in 2011, they will have to adjust their boundaries from what they have now to the new census figures.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, if the city has wards and elects council members by ward district, and they're a city of the first class, then they would have to redraw their boundaries.
And then,
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Gehring, then when we get through with the legislative plan and that's signed, then they will again adjust their boundaries for within, as it reflects with the map that we've adopted.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct. So if
So they get to do it twice.
If ward boundaries are drawn and the legislative plan later comes back and splits a precinct or a ward as it's been redrawn this year, then the city will have to adjust those boundaries so that the precinct isn't being split by a legislative district.
Representative Murphy, Representative Poppe, yeah, when we had the folks that came to talk to us about Representative Kahn's bill, included all of the cities, including Barnesville. All of those communities. Moorhead was another one, too. So I would encourage you to talk to Representative Kahn. She's got some ideas on this. So any other questions? Mr. Gehring?
And Madam Chair, I guess I should correct myself. I think I misspoke in saying that only first-class cities have that problem, that the legislation has kind of gone back and forth. So now that I'm reading it again, I think that any city that has wards, regardless of the first class, will have to go through the process this spring if they're having fall elections. Mm-hmm. So one of the big questions that cities and local units of government are going to have to decide before they even engage in this redistricting process is they need to figure out if they actually have to redistrict at all. A lot of municipalities in the state actually don't elect council members by ward, and so or they may have just one precinct. So most townships in the state just have one precinct, and in those situations, redistricting isn't actually required because there's nothing to redistrict. Everybody's has the same equal opportunity to vote for all members of the city council, as opposed to in ward areas where you're voting for particular districts. There's approximately 80 cities of all 800 in the state that do have the ward structure, and that will have to go through the ward redistricting process over the next year and a half. It's also possible in some counties and cities that even if they do have wards, they may not actually have to redraw the lines. If the existing lines and the existing population numbers match up, they can just reconfirm or reestablish the same ward boundaries and the same precinct boundaries that they've had over the past decade. It's a very simple process and sort of a routine process. It does require some action by the city council or the county board to reestablish those boundaries, but there isn't necessarily a requirement that they have to move the lines unless there's some other action that forces them to do so. So, as I mentioned, if the legislative plan is enacted that creates a conflict or creates a split of some kind in a city or a county, they may have to redraw their ward boundaries. But if just on the face of the numbers and looking at the map, if there's nothing out of place, a city or a county can choose to maintain the existing boundaries that they have without going through the process of drawing new maps.
And Mr. Gehring, how often does that happen?
Madam Chair, I guess I don't know how often boundaries are just reestablished as opposed to redistricted, because it's a simpler process. I would guess that if a city or a county can make the argument that their district lines are fine, they'll save the time and expense and just reestablish those same boundaries unless there's a compelling reason to do something different.
Okay. Mr. Gehring?
So for cities and counties and school districts that decide that they do have to do some redistricting, what makes a workable district? Generally, basically, the principles that we've discussed in the past related to equal population requirements and some of the constitutional requirements for compact territory and contiguous territory and all of those principles will apply to local units of government as well. And so they'll have to create compact districts that are substantially equal in population. The population requirement, though, is a little bit different for local units of government. As you know, for congressional districts, your goal is going to have to be to make every single congressional district equal in population to a zero deviation. There's slightly more leeway for the legislative districts, and there is more leeway even beyond that for local units of government. In statute, there's actually an allowance for county commissioner districts to be within a range of 10% of the average population of each commissioner district within that county. So there can be some more substantial deviation in terms of population, but the other requirements in terms of compactness and contiguity and sort of racial makeup and sort of Voting Rights Act concerns will all apply to local units of government as well. So what happens if a local unit of government decides that they do need to redistrict but they don't complete it on time, or they decide not to do it? Some of the same remedies that apply to legislative and congressional districts will apply to local units of government as well. Citizens are permitted by statute to petition to either have a redistricting plan that's been adopted by a local unit of government changed in some way, or if they don't comply with constitutional or statutory requirements, they can they'll be challenged in court based on those concerns. For city councils, there's also a special sort of hook in statute to make sure that the cities do the redistricting that they're required to do, which is that if a city council doesn't complete a redistricting plan by the deadline in statute, the mayor and the city council is prohibited from being paid until they complete their plan. So I would guess that most cities will complete their plans on time. There's also special provisions in statute for in addition to county school board and city districts, there's provisions for redistricting soil and water conservation districts. This is actually a new law that was enacted in 2003 that I believe is only going to affect one particular soil and water conservation district in Washington County, because that's the only district that elects members by district. Hennepin County Park districts will also have to be redistricted this cycle. And then in 2013, the legislature will be required to redistrict the boundaries of the Met Council district as well. So with that sort of background, I'll walk through some of the dates that are in the timeline in your packet. You all know the big dates. April 1st was the census date. December 21st, we found out that we're going to maintain 8 congressional seats. And February 21st of 2012 is going to be your deadline for completing legislative and congressional boundaries. The deadlines for locals include April 3rd, which is going to be the deadline for municipal districts to be redrawn. So those are going to be city council districts. May 1st is going to be the deadline for county, school district, soil and water conservation district, and park districts to be complete. Counties wait until cities are done because for the similar sort of nesting requirements that I discussed earlier, counties have to nest precincts within their county, so they can't split precincts. They have to wait until the municipality has completed drawing their precincts before they can draw their county commissioner districts. There's a number of other sort of miscellaneous deadlines on the timeline as well that you can sort of read for yourself. I'm happy to answer questions if you have them. There's deadlines for establishing combined polling places. So if you have two precincts that are going to share one place for voting, there's deadlines and notification requirements and statute for cities to establish those. New polling places may have to be set up if precinct boundaries are changed in a way that makes a current polling place unworkable or out of the precinct. There's also deadlines in statute for voters if they're going to challenge a local redistricting plan to file that challenge in court. And as I said, in 2013, the final deadline of this cycle will be for completion of Met Council redistricting plans by you as members of the legislature.
Members, any questions for Mr. Gehring? Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I can go into some more detail if you have specific questions as we travel around the state. It sounds like you may have me speak through this again. So if you have specific questions or need more detail about the process, I'm happy to get that information for you.
Yes, and I think, Mr. Gearing, you will have this online for people to see as well.
Yes.
Okay, very good. And we'll maybe make sure that we have that printed in our next agenda so we have the web address for everyone to see, or if you can put it on your handout, that would be helpful too. Any other questions from Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question about the process as far as how it happens in the state when we redistrict, and just a clarification on which part of the state we start at and how that actually works. If I could get that from, I suppose, Mr. Gearing, or
Mr. Gearing, any thoughts on that? I think that all depends. I think everybody has a different starting point.
There is. I just didn't know, Madam Chair, if there is a specific starting point. If we always start in one location in the state to go around, or how it works exactly.
There is definitely a numbering system of how it's how it's done. That's, I believe, Mr. Gearing, is that in statute that it has to be numbered starting at the north west corner? Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. But the numbering just applies to the way that you number the district, so it doesn't mean you have to draw District 1A first. It just means that District 1A has to be in the northwest corner of the state. So when you're creating plans or deciding, how you want to draw a particular district, you can start wherever you want.
Being Representative Poppy's district, right?
And it becomes more and more difficult as you complete all of your districts. The final district that you have to create is going to be the hardest one, because you're going to have boxed yourself into whichever corner of the state you're moving to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably not in my district necessarily, because it's kind of in an odd location maybe, but I was just trying to get a sense of, I'm sure politically there's probably a strategy one way or the other. I just was trying to think of feasibly if there's a sensible starting point and a sensible ending point that I just was trying to figure that out and was
what. Representative Poppy, I'm guessing that everybody has their idea of where it should start and where it should end. I think it really is at the discretion of each individual as they look at the map.
Okay. So.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gearing. And Lee Millier, and I hope I said it properly. I just call you Lee because it's just so much easier. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lee Millier. I'm with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. You should have two handouts. The first one is redistricting technology and budget. And this is just to provide some contrast and costs of technology for the past two decades. By and large, the cost of technology has decreased in the last 10 years. The cost of a Maptitude license is about the only item you'll see that has increased. You'll notice that the HP printers increased, but that's because the 2000 printer was a black and white and the 2010 printer is color. One other item, in 2000 we had 4 staff, and this time we have 3. And on a more trivial note, the budget in 1990 approached $800,000.
But you said in 1990 it was 800,000. Do you know why, or what was the?
Madam Chair, the we used Sun Unix workstations in 1990, which were around 25,000 per workstation. The plotter alone was $50,000. There was only one plotter. Because there was only one plotter, maps had to be stored in lockers, and caucus staff were provided keys to get their maps.
They've come a long way.
Right, yes. And the redistricting software was all written for Minnesota. It wasn't something that was bought off the shelf.
Thank you, Mr. Millier.
Madam Chair,
Representative Murphy.
You said that we have three people. Is that in your office?
Yes. Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes.
And so the costs that you're giving us, or the comparisons that you're giving us, are the costs for in your office?
Madam Chair.
Representative, or Mr. Milliere.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Murphy. Okay.
I have one other handout.
Mm-hmm.
It's the new capabilities for Mapitude for redistricting. And Mapitude is the software that we're using this time, and we also used it 10 years ago. Some of the new capabilities include publishing plans to HTML. This is a very simplistic way to share plans with people. It's not like intended for a web designer to post plans on their website or anything like that. There's a tool to email plans automatically. You can email the full caliper plan or email the HTML file for people who don't have Mapitude. There's a report set now. In 2000, we had to individually select reports and run them. Now we can run whole sets of reports.
Can you go into detail on what the reports include?
The reports, we had 8 reports that we posted on the website 10 years ago. They included a population summary, compactness, split subdivisions. There were 2 minority reports, an incumbents report. I'm doing this on memory. I don't have them written down. I think that's 6.
Okay.
More plan components, and one more that I can't recall.
Maybe you can send it to us. That would be helpful. Okay.
There's a new suggest features tool, and this would be ideal for congressional districts since they need to be exactly equal in population. Mm-hmm. And what you can do is basically suggest a population to search for if you are, say, 2 or 3 people short. You can search for those blocks that have 2 or 3 people. There's an automatic district map tool where you can, it's just a little tool built right into the redistricting tool box for quickly creating a district map. There's a boundary layer tool, and I guess a good example of this would be to use a Senate plan as a boundary layer and to build your House districts within the Senate plan so that the House districts don't cross into other Senate districts since they're required to nest. Mm-hmm. There's plan versioning, and that basically allows multiple users to create plans. It timestamps them, puts the username on the version, so you can go back and look at many of the versions of the plans. There's a bunch of other new tools as well, KML files. They've redesigned the redistricting tool to be more intuitive, a few other things. Issues, disaggregation tool. Basically a tool to allocate the political data from voting districts to census blocks. That's not working right now. And there's a Mapbook tool where you can basically print out an entire plan. That appears to be buggy right now as well.
All right. Members, any questions on the software and how it works? All right. Representative Lou.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not quite on how it works in that, but I'm just curious, and obviously, you know, we do this every 10 years, so software and capabilities of the equipment changes, but what do we do with the equipment and all that when we're finished with this process?
Mr. Milliard.
Madam Chair, Representative, 10 years ago, the LCC purchased all the equipment, and we traded a lot of it back in, or we recycled it. This time, all of the caucuses are all purchasing their own equipment, so it will be up to them to decide what to do with the equipment.
Representative Liu.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Milliard. And for members' purposes, you know, on Friday we are taking a field trip to Marshall. What time does we? We are departing at 8 a.m. and the van will be parked at the State Office Building Service lot. Check your emails because Tom will be good about emailing you all of the details. And look forward to seeing you all in Marshall, and we'll get a chance to go more over the details. I think for the local units of government, it's a concern for them of how the timing process works for redistricting. Representative Hortman, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What time does the hearing start in Marshall?
The hearing starts at 1. So we'll have some time to get something to eat before we have the hearing, and then we'll have the hearing starting at 1.
Do you have the address for the location where we'll be doing the hearing in Marshall?
It's 607 West Main Street.
Okay.
And that in Marshall, and that'll be also the details that Mr. Freeman will send out to you. So, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about, I'm unable to join you, I'm sorry, on Friday, but just about the historical piece, I was just wondering, and maybe it goes back to the question of where do you start and how do you do that, but it, could we get, and maybe you'll give that at on Friday, could you give a history of where it has started in the past and how it's worked as far as laying out the map? And I'm just wondering, and then my other question would be just who will be invited? Who are you expecting to speak at and come forward on these road trips?
Sure. I think, Representative Poppy, when it comes to where people start, I don't think that there is one set way, at least in looking at the different plans. I think everybody, like I said, I think it's just a random start. I think even for the courts, it's probably been different. But I'm not even sure if we have that knowledge of where we know that they started in their planning process. That was, you know, they did that all on their own. I don't know if that's even public record as far as they started in this corner of the state or they started, you know, over here. So, you know, something maybe that if you get a chance to meet one of the judges from the last go-around, ask them that question and see how they went, or even if they remember. I don't know if they remember and where they started. So, and then what was your other question, Representative Poppy?
I'm just curious on who you've invited or who would you expect to come to the meeting and, sure. You know, what would you hope to get out of the testimony?
Well, we sent out press releases to the area encouraging everyone to come that can make it, you know, and we anticipate that, you know, we'll have local government officials most likely that'll have questions about how will this impact their redistricting process and what will the timeline be. But also citizens that are interested in the process, too, and they should be aware of it. It's been advertised, and yeah. So,
okay.
Representative Murphy, or Representative Poppy.
I was just going to say one other thing. I was just going to move the minutes again because I wondered if you needed a quorum in order
yes,
to be able to
are.
Do that, so yes. I just wanted to do that.
Thank you, and thank you for doing double duty on that. Representative Poppy moves the minutes for January 18th, 2011. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We just passed the minutes for January 18th, 2011, and those will be reflected in the committee minutes. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, could you tell us about the vehicle that we will be riding in and who will be driving?
Sure. Representative Murphy, it will be a very comfortable van that we will be riding in. Mr. Freeman will be our driver for it. And then I don't know if we are going to need to have a second vehicle or
not.
Okay, so we'll have two vehicles total, and we are still working out the arrangements for the driver for the second vehicle. So any questions, Representative Murphy?
Not at this time.
Okay. Ms. Conley and I have done these kind of tours before, and they can be great fun. It'll be a good chance for us to get to know each other a little bit better, too. So, any other questions, members? If not, thank you for coming.